So thank you for having me here today. And as Kevin mentioned, I'm president of the PSWD board, and I'm very happy to have learned that your board and your minister invited us to have their district assembly here in April. And I'm hoping that I will see lots of you in volunteer opportunities when the time comes around. But back to the real reason I'm here. The reason I'm here is to ask the question, why, in fact, are we here? And I don't mean why are we here this morning, although that's a good question. I mean, why do we get up every morning and keep coming back after everything that life throws at us? Here's one thing I know about that question. When you look at one of the first pages of our hymnal, you'll see a list of our seven principles. The fourth principle states that we Unitarian Universalists affirm as important the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Meaning. Now, with that in mind, I want to tell you about something that happened to me 30 years ago, way back in 1988. What happened that day very much dictated how I have felt about many things ever since. My wife Susan and I were living in Tucson. Susan was teaching at the University of Arizona, and I was in graduate school working as a part-time sports writer at one of the daily papers. That particular Friday night, I had covered a high school football game. When the game ended, I did my post-game interviews and headed back to the paper to write my story. In the car on the way, I suddenly had a terrible pain in my chest, worse than anything I ever felt before. I pulled the car over to the side of the road. I thought I must be having a heart attack. Now, before I go any further, let me give you some advice. If you ever feel a pain in your chest so bad you don't think you can drive your car, do not do what I did. I thought about it. I thought, I'm not going to call 911. I was in what I considered a rough part of town, and I didn't want to leave my car there to go to the hospital. And I didn't want to call my wife for the same reason. I didn't want her to come down there. I thought, I don't want to go back to the paper. I was a young, ambitious reporter. I didn't need to create a scene by having a heart attack in the middle of the newsroom just as our deadline for the next day's paper was approaching. And then I thought, if I have time to think about all this, I guess I'm not going to die. So instead of going back to the newsroom, I went home and wrote my story. These were pre-email days, and if you were a reporter on location, you had to phone your story in and dictate it to a copy editor. So I called, and the copy editor said, you know, we're having a very busy night. Call me back in 15 minutes. So I sat there with what I thought was a heart attack for 15 more minutes. Finally, my work was done, and I told Susan we had to go to the hospital, where they discovered I did not have a heart attack. In fact, they couldn't find anything wrong with me. They did believe me when I said I was in pain, but they didn't have an explanation for it. They gave me medicine for what they called musculoskeletal pain. But it didn't really help much. A prescription for something stronger that Susan filled the next day didn't work either. But I had confidence in modern medicine. And I believed what they had told me. The pain will go away. But it didn't. All through the weekend, it only got worse. By Sunday afternoon, it was impossible. The pain in my chest had only gotten more intense, and for reasons I did not understand at the time, my left leg had gone numb. We went back to the hospital. This time, the first nurse who saw me said, "You don't look too good." After that, everything went fast. I was in a bed. Doctors and nurses scurried around shouting, sticking needles in me, fiddling with IVs. This went on for a while, and then someone I assumed was a doctor came up to me and said, "You're going to have a big operation, and you don't have a choice." Susan came into the room. She had the saddest look on her face. She told me she had called some of our close friends, and they were coming over. Later, I learned the doctors had told her to call somebody to be with her because they weren't sure I was going to make it through the day. I still didn't know what was wrong, but as I was being wheeled on a gurney to the operating room, I heard two people behind me talking. The first one said, "Are you scrubbing up for this one?" And the second voice said, very enthusiastically, "You bet." So even though I didn't know what was going on, I was glad that guy was going to be there. Eventually, I learned I'd had an aneurysm. My aorta had dissected, torn apart. The pain had been caused by blood filling up my chest and pressing on my heart and lungs. My leg was numb because blood had stopped flowing to the rest of my body, the extremities being affected first. The recovery was rough. It was a while before I could even understand what had happened. Now, most people who have aneurysms die instantly. In preparation for today, I checked. Even now, 30 years later, the mortality rate for an aneurysm is 80%. 4 out of 5 people die, half before they even get to the hospital. For some reason I didn't understand, I lived. Afterwards, during the several months it took to get back to normal, I kept thinking, why me? And I didn't mean, why did this have to happen to me? I meant, why did I get to live? The odds were against it. We learned nobody had ever had this kind of operation at this particular hospital and lived. I was the first one. We learned that first night in the emergency room, an x-ray had been misread and a doctor had misdiagnosed my problem. Why was I still alive when so many people under the same circumstances die? I couldn't stop thinking about it. When Susan and I became members of our first UU congregation a couple years later, I had trouble getting past the fact that you didn't have to promise to believe something in exchange for the opportunity to say you're a UU. But you did have to promise to do some things. The responsible search for meaning was one of the tasks you had to be willing to take on. I recovered from that aneurysm back in 1988. Life more or less returned to normal. After a while, I even stopped wandering around mumbling, why me? One mundane thing that did happen as a result, at a point in life when it mattered to me, nobody would sell me life insurance. Actuarial tables said I didn't have much chance of living too long anyway. So I had that aneurysm, I eventually learned, because I have a genetic disorder called Marfan syndrome. You can look it up in WebMD later if you want. It's a fairly rare disorder. It causes a number of problems, but the most common is the most dangerous. People with Marfan syndrome are prone to aneurysms. No insurance company would consider the risk, but in 2001, 13 years after my aneurysm, an insurance salesman said, you know, it's been a while. Maybe if you can get your doctor to write a letter saying you're out of danger, I can get my company to sell you a policy. My ever so responsible doctor said, well, first let's make sure you are out of danger. And he scheduled an ultrasound. Before I even got home from the test, he had called me to tell me to come back. 13 years after my first aneurysm, I had a bulge in my aorta and a leak in my heart valve. It was not the emergency it was the first time, but if I ignored it, my aorta would tear again and I could easily die again. I had the second big surgery of my life a few weeks later. Again, why did I live? Why did an insurance salesman's pitch inspire me to have a test that revealed I was in trouble again? When I was recovering from that second surgery, I remembered something one of my mother's friends had said to me when I saw her for the first time after my first surgery. She had said, you don't look too bad for somebody who was almost to the other side. And in one way or another, every one of us has been almost to the other side and found our way back. I can tell you about the medical disasters that might have killed me but didn't. But everybody here has something big and bad and impossible that has happened to them. And if it hasn't happened yet, I can promise you it will. We all have moments when everything is on the table, when at the end we're either going to be dead or alive. We will have saved something very important to us, or we will have lost everything. And in that moment, we don't know which it's going to be. For some of us, for me, it involves a physical health problem. But it could be something that happens to your family. It could be a life-changing challenge to your career. Where do we get the courage to face what we don't know? How do we gather up all our strength and courage and say to the universe, no, today is not the day you defeat me? Well, I don't know for sure, but you didn't come here today to hear me say I don't know. So here are some ideas. First, we do it for love. When I was in the intensive care unit after that first surgery, I was in bad shape. I spent several days on a ventilator because I couldn't breathe on my own. There were tubes and wires stuck in every part of my body that something could be stuck into. I didn't understand what had happened. I was in a bad mood. Half the time I was delirious with pain, and the other half I was crazy because of the morphine. But then my wife leaned down one day and whispered in my ear, "I can't wait till you get home and we can lay next to each other." So we do it for love. One other thing we do it for. Once after that first surgery, Susan told me she had talked to one of the doctors who told her how difficult the situation had been in the operating room and how close I'd come to dying. The doctor said he must have something he still wants to do. I don't know what doctors see in those moments, but they see something. They know who wants to live and who doesn't. So yes, sometimes we do it for love, and sometimes because the work we care about or believe we will care about is worth the fight to live. A few years ago, I had my third aneurysm. I was on a business trip. After a long plane ride, I felt a funny pressure in my abdomen. Now, even if you travel a lot, sometimes a long flight will interrupt your digestive system. And that's what I thought I had, gas. The next morning, though, I still felt that pressure. So I went for a walk thinking that would help. It didn't, and once again, I felt my left leg going numb. So I called my cardiologist back here in LA. He said, "Go to the hospital." This time the aneurysm, which had by then dissected, torn apart, was in my abdomen, a far more serious location than my first two, in my chest. It took a 15-hour operation and a very long recovery that in some ways has never ended. Luck or fate or karma or God or something was on my side one more time. This time, by coincidence, I was in downtown Baltimore, a few minutes from Johns Hopkins University, arguably one of the best hospitals in the world, and also the one place in the world where research is being done on Marfan syndrome, the rare disorder I have. A brilliant, high-risk surgeon just happened to be there at that moment, waiting for his next impossible challenge to tackle. My original plan for that business trip had been to finish my work in Baltimore quickly. Then Susan was going to meet me the following day, and we were going to head off for a vacation in Turkey. If my aorta had waited one more day to dissect, I wouldn't be here. But that's how it is for all of us. There are moments when things are so difficult that we say yes, because to say no would mean all the pain and suffering and anguish we have gone through had been for nothing. So that is the third thing we all share in our search for meaning. We do it for love. We do it because the work we do in the world is so important. And we do it because we need to make sure the suffering we are sometimes forced to endure is worth it. And when that happens, that is when we say, "No, today is not the day you defeat me." Remember what Viktor Frankl wrote in the passage I read to you a few minutes ago. "He who knows the why for his existence will be able to bear almost any how." We live for love, for work that matters, and because the struggle to make that mean something has been so hard, we won't give ourselves the right to stop. Remember that the next time you have to look up and say to the universe, "No, today is not the day you defeat me."